Welcome, DC fans, to another episode of the DC Comics News Weekly podcast, where we talk everything DC movies, TV and streaming, comic books, and sometimes a little something extra. Hey, but don't take my word for it, because with me is a man whose word is law. It's Brad Villicky. How are you, brother?
Good. How you doing?
I'm really good. Hot. England is unseasonably hot. We are actually having a summer. Who knew it could happen?
Yeah. So is New York.
And I just hope everyone out there is safe, because we've heard some of the floodings and stuff. So I'm glad you're safe, and your nearest and dearest are safe as well. So, but on that note, we don't have superheroes to come and save us in real life, but we do have them in movies, TV and streaming, and comic books. Our first movie news is, though, not about a hero at all. Oh, no. It's about his villain, a villain, and his lady. And this is... I don't know how to feel about this. It seems that, according to the amazing composer that you and I love of the Joker score for one and Joker 2 Folie à Deux, has said that, it looks like the movie is going to be an all-out musical or heavily musical. What'd you make of this one?
I don't know what to think of this. This could just be a bunch of nothing. Because he did not notice his choice of words was very... interesting to me, because in this he says it's going to have a lot of music. He didn't say songs, and that's entirely different things. And Zazie Betts kind of hinted that they're going to use the music in a way that's not expected, and so that doesn't necessarily mean to me that it has to be a full-blown musical. What I'm thinking that it's going to have a lot to do with what's going on in Harley Quinn's mind. So I think obviously it makes sense. I mean, you have Lady Gaga. Why would you not have music?
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It seems like I think what songs we're going to get is in her mind, and it's going to be her singing. I don't think we're going to get. I mean, maybe we'll. Maybe we'll get the Joker singing, but I think it's going to be a fantasy in her head. And I just don't know how many songs that means. But I love that he's doing the score again, meanwhile, because the score was such an outstanding part of that film. And the idea of weaving in those songs with his score could be a really cool, cool thing. I'm looking forward to hearing it. But I'm still not entirely expecting it to be a full-blown musical. Are you familiar with Dancer in the Dark?
I've heard of it, never seen it.
It was a musical that starred Bjork, but...
Okay.
She was obsessed with musicals, so all the music that was in the movie was in her head, and I think that's going to be a very similar thing with this. But you know, Zazie Beetz, that's also said that it's a brave choice, or maybe the composer said it's a brave choice.
It was Zazie.
It is a very brave choice to do this, and I'm intrigued, and I'm looking forward to it.
See, the thing is, again. Same brain. If it was a full-blown singing dancing musical, I would be extremely put off, because I'm not the biggest fan. I love films like The Blues Brothers that have music as a central theme running through, but I don't like when someone's having a conversation and then break into song and dance in the middle of it. I can tolerate stuff like Dirty Dancing. Buzz Luhrmann's movies are incredible with their use of music, but stuff like Les Mis, Phantom of the Opera, Greatest Showman, I can't deal. But what you said really ties in what was going on in my head, that Harley's obsession and love for the Joker and her belief that he loves her back is a fantasy. And those songs, that romance, could all be what's playing in her mind. And if they do go down that route, particularly with the composer that we've got for this score, who was just award-winning with the first Joker movie, and it's a score that has not come off my playlist since that film came out. I mean, I've seen the film a couple of times. I've heard that soundtrack dozens, if possibly not even, maybe even hundreds of times by now. So if they're going down that route as a discordant, semi... wordless opera, that could be incredible. So I'm hoping, we'll see. I'm hoping that's the way they go, rather than an all singing, all dancing, singing in the rain type. But that would be extremely crazy, and that's what these two characters are. So, let's see what happens. And on a bittersweet note, as fans of Kevin Conroy that we both are, this lovely little snippet we got from the Blu-ray and 4K release and remaster of Batman Mask of the Phantasm just showed what an amazing man, an amazing talent and actor he was. What were your thoughts on this story?
Well, one thing I loved about this is just seeing him do the Batman voice, not in a recording studio, just doing the voice. I thought that was such a nice little...
So powerful.
Yeah, I love that. And I think he was really on to something when he said that he sees Bruce Wayne as the mask and Batman is true. And that made me think about it and made me realize that that's very smart, because it made me realize that that's how I think of it. That's how I think of the character, and I always have. And that also the clip that they show from the animated series in that little interview also brings that to light. And I got what he was saying, and how he played that was perfect. And that kind of understanding, that intuition that he had, is what makes him probably the best Batman that we've ever had.
Yeah, absolutely. To my mind, he is and always will be. But in terms of just the body of work, there will be little chance for anyone to equal the catalogue of Batman work that Kevin Conroy produced. But yeah, I mean, we're totally behind that notion that Batman is the little boy who saw his parents die and Bruce Wayne is the master to protect himself in the public. And Adam and I have said it frequently, you know, on I Am the Night, where when he's in the cave, when he's not out in public as Bruce, even when he's not masked and speaking to Alfred, the majority of the time, it's not in the Bruce Wayne higher, happier, more colourful tones, as Kevin put it in the clip, but it is the Batman voice he uses. And it was, like you said, the way he switched in the clip to speak in the Batman voice was so deep. And the way he described it as going into a dark corner of himself brings to mind the wonderful story he wrote for the DC Pride special, where for so many years and decades he was ridiculed and put down for his sexuality, and that was the mask he put on, and that's the hero he had to become to stay sane and keep going and keep working. And if that's what he tapped into, then I've always loved the man. I've always loved his work. And even though we've lost him, that love and appreciation is just getting stronger and stronger. So I've got Mask of the Phantasm. I've got Mask of the Phantasm again in the Batman box set, in the Batman Animated Series box set, but a Blu-ray release, remastered to 4K with that kind of a special feature, you know, I have to have it. Yep. I have to have it. So yeah, amazing. Now, Aquaman has been, without a doubt, the most successful DC movie of recent years. But there was a pitch so dark before James Wan got his take, and it had some very horrific elements of its own, that even Warner said, we can't go with this. This is a fascinating story, isn't it?
Yeah, and I gotta say, I'm glad that they didn't go with this. I don't know what that, always that pull to make DC characters dark. And I think it's, what I really think it is that Batman is such the flagship character. Say what you want about Superman, but Batman is really where it's at when it comes to popularity. And Batman always has that bit of darkness, you know, since the Frank Miller and Tim Burton days, you can't seem to shake that. But I don't think that all DC characters need to go down that dark route.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't need to see Aquaman mourning a son and, you know, having lost his kingdom. I think we got both the Aquaman in the actor with Jason Momoa.
Absolutely.
And the movie that we needed. And I think that goes to show why it's the biggest, the highest grossing DCU movie. I think they were wise not to go that dark. It was kind of like Logan. They compared it to Logan. Logan works with Wolverine. I don't think a Logan take on Aquaman would really work. What about you?
completely agree. I mean, yes, he's had some darker runs in the comics. The Peter David run springs to mind, and actually moments of the Geoff Johns run as well, and particularly obviously the Peter David and the when he lost his hand, lost his kingdom, lost his child, the harpoon hands kind of stuff. And there were some really great stories told in that time, but people seem to now, because of Batman mainly, just seem to think, oh, DC's the dark company. But if you look at the books they put out on a monthly basis, some of them are the biggest fun romps. I mean, Nightwing, Batman's son to all intents and purposes, who can be dark, who can be a dangerous fighter and a horrible opponent to mess with. But he's a normal guy with a life, a young girlfriend, a three-legged pup who's adorable. And he's trying to save his city both as Dick Grayson and as Nightwing. Read Nightwing and tell me that's a dark, mournful comic. Read Titans. Again, they're now DC's premier supergroup, and it's the former Teen Sidekicks. DC put out a lot of fan stuff, but Batman, by its nature.
Yeah, I kind of glad that you brought up Son of Kal-El. I'm reading the. Absolutely. I started reading yesterday the second volume.
So good.
And there, it's just
pure sunshine.
Feel pure about it, but it's just a really good story. Same with Nightwing. I would say that the current run on Nightwing is one of the best superhero runs that we've gotten since Jason Aaron on Thor.
Yeah.
And that's saying a lot for me, because that's one of my favorites. But yeah, once again, I was going to go back to say what I've been saying, is it's a great time to be a DC fan. And a lot of the reasons why that is because of the books that they're printing. Not the movies, not the TV, and as good as they can be, it's the comics that they're producing.
Absolutely. Jason Aaron's Thor is, for me, alongside Walt Simonson's, as the two greatest runs in the character's history. And Mr. Aaron's coming to DC to do a Batman story. So watch this space. But Batman, by his nature, creature of the night, darkness. But not every DC character is like that. And the whole Blue Beetle, Shazam aspect of things, even the two Wonder Woman movies prove that. And they're fantastically entertaining films that everyone in the family can enjoy. So more of that, please. I enjoyed the horror elements of James Wan's version. The trench were terrifying, but it was a romp. It had deserts, Indiana Jones vibes. Momoa was fantastic in the role.
Any movie that has a dinosaur in it that's a superhero movie is a romp.
There you go. Exactly. Can do no wrong with dinosaurs. Love them. Now, this is where we must bow our heads and say, yes, told you so. Crisis on Infinite Earths, the animated movie. Not one, not two, but a three-parter. That makes me happy because they're going to tell the story properly. Three acts. It's a much better idea. I think this is going to be incredible. What do you make of it?
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad. Stretch it out to four or five movies. I don't care. Just tell the whole story. If you try to cram this into one animated movie, it's not going to work. And I think that's why I think, stepping back a little bit, in the Crisis on Infinite Earths that we got within the Arrowverse was so good, because it was a crossover event. If you tried to tell that in one episode,
exactly,
it would never work. You're going to try to do that, and now, granted, animated movies generally clock in around an hour and a half, maybe up to hour 40, but getting, you know, despite your Into the Spider-Verses, but so roughly you think that at max is going to be 2 hours. You cannot tell the Crisis story in 2 hours. So I'm so happy they're doing three. That makes me feel confident they're going to get a lot of what was in that story. Kind of makes me want to reread it. I revisited it a little bit during the pandemic, but makes me kind of want to go back and reread it. Yeah.
We are of one mind yet again, young Brad. But yeah, I mean, three movies just makes sense. I mean, it's a 12-issue miniseries, but two of the issues are double-sized. So this way we're getting roughly four issues per film. And that just makes sense, because that's the way, roughly, when you look at the story itself, it's broken up into its opening, middle, and ending arcs.
Yep.
And so I just think that's going to work much better. And call me cautiously optimistic, but does that mean as well that they're going to do a similar thing with the 12-issue Watchmen series? Because I've been speaking to some people and I'm hearing rumors that, yes, it's going to be at least two or three films, but the first film is going to be set in the Minutemen era. It's going to deconstruct the novel and tell the history chronologically. And I think that could be incredible as well, because you could have a whole universe built over three films. If that's true, that'd be amazing.
You know, I got to hand it. there's a lot of slack that gets thrown towards the Watchmen movie. But one thing that I always
respected
about it is they crammed so much of what was in that book. And I still don't know how Zack Snyder was able to do it. That opening credit scene was incredible with what they got into it. The music that he used in the book, they used in the movie in cool ways. As a fan, I love that. And the fact that they could do that and even get more into the details over three films with an animated Watchmen movie. Oh, my God. Yeah,
sign me up and take my money, Warner Brothers.
Yep.
Sign me up
and take my money. That might be the thing I would be most excited for since Sandman premiered.
Absolutely. You know, and we're going to be talking about that series a little bit later, I think, aren't we? Yeah. But like you say, these two stories, Crisis on Infinite Earths, The Watchmen, we've said it before, pivotal, important, groundbreaking, universe-defining books that have never gone out of print. You can get deluxe versions, omnibus versions, box sets for all these stories. I mean, I've got Watchmen, I think, five or six times in five or six different versions now. Watchmen, I need a new trade paperback because I've worn it out.
Watchmen and Sandman are the only books that I have doubles of, because I have the annotated Watchmen, the Absolute Watchmen, the hardcover, and the paperback. And I have the first three Absolute Sandmans and trade paperbacks. But yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Because the stories are just so good, I can't get enough.
I need to invest in the Absolute, definitely. I've got Noir.
Good,
yeah, I've got Noir. I've got the Artifact Edition, the massive true size Dave Gibbons artwork version, which Adam bought me, and it's
I don't know if I've ever even seen that.
Oh, it's incredible.
Oh wow,
it's incredible. It's got to be like 18 inches. I mean, it's bigger than Absolutes, way bigger. It's literally the size that Dave Gibbons drew the art in, and it's got all the panel borders and everything and the notes and annotations. It's fantastic. I'll send you some video clips of that later. It's wonderful. But let's hope in Crisis, three parts, I'm all in. If they do the same with Watchmen, baby, I'm a happy fan. Speaking of happy fans, you've seen it, you loved it. Blue Beetle is officially the most successful DC movie this year. It's overtaken Shazam 2, and it's still selling and doing well. Ah, oh, be still my heart. I'm happy. Wonderful news.
Yeah, I think there's a little vindication here. I think people expected not to like it. They went in not to like it. And I think that what's resonating with people is the heart. I saw a lot of that in Shazam too, and I don't know why that didn't resonate as much. That's a whole other conversation. But I'm happy for Blue Beetle. I think this is a movie that's going to do well outside of its theatrical run. I think it's going to maybe sell downloads, sell physical copies. I think it's going to be a movie that people are going to revisit and rediscover. It's going to have a future.
I think it's going to be the little train that could, this film. And why? Because it's a fun, happy, fast-paced family action movie, not people what you expect a DC film to be. Dark. I love Doc. I live for the Doc. Batman's my favorite character. But there are so many great comics and products DC is putting out. And its animated films are not all dark and horrible and mysterious. The Death Short is 10 minutes of joy, even though it's based on the character of Death. But it's wonderful. It's life-affirming and it's enriching. And I truly believe that this Blue Beetle movie is exactly the same. And with the little hints of going back to save Ted Kord, everyone's favorite Blue Beetle, in a possible sequel. Come on, Warners. Put some more money behind this. Put some more advertising behind this. Let fans see this film on the big screen, and then let it come on to be a big success on home media as well. So that takes us away from the big screen. Let's talk about TV now. And I'm a little bit confused by this story, because I'm sure that when the slate was announced, they said that the first project out of the gate and broadcast would be the Creature Commandos animated series. And now GamesRadar and a few other people are saying the Guns First Issue project is not what you expected. It's the Creature Commandos. But I'm sure that was always the case, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's very good at not misleading, but kind of throwing people
off the scent
that are nothing.
Yeah.
who knows? I mean, I don't know what to expect. I never did, you know, so I don't have any expectations in my head. The only thing that we know at this point is that it's going to be set in modern times, because with all the characters and their legacies, they could have been very different, could have been at various different times. So we know it's going to be modern times. Okay, but that's it. I have no idea what to expect. So I don't know what James, I know James Gunn's work. It's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be that far removed from what I've seen before. So that's what I'm expecting. And I don't think it's going to be that different. So we'll see.
This is the guy who thrives on stories told by great characters. He's a story-driven, performance-driven, character-driven filmmaker. And if his animated series are like his TV series, I mean, come on, Peacemaker was one of the best things on TV of the last 5 years, as far as I'm concerned. It's fantastic. His Suicide Squad was brilliant. The Guardians of the Galaxy movies are my favorite huge Marvel hits. Movie. Yeah, yeah, great films. So Creature Commandos is so in his wheelhouse. Vampires, werewolves, Frankenstein's monsters, and Medusa in the present day, sent on missions by the US government. It's got me written all over it. It's like the perfect successor to the quirky, beautiful Doom Patrol that I miss, and I can't wait for the last part of season four. So unexpected, nope. Exciting, yes.
Say, I guess, come to think of it as we talk, I would have one expectation for the series.
Mm.
And that is for it to have an overarching story.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for as well. Individual episodes, but with a theme running through. Yeah.
Maybe they'll throw us a curveball with that, but that's one thing that I would expect.
Absolutely. And isn't it lovely to hear David Harbour, who is one of the finest character actors working today. Whatever you might say about the latest Hellboy film, he was great in it. He was absolutely brilliant. And what would Stranger Things be without him? So his excitement, his passion, his love for the way the Frankenstein character is going to be portrayed, again, just adds extra levels of excitement for me for this project. So bring it on. Looking forward to it.
Yep.
Now, here is the news that you and I have been waiting for with bated breath for about a year. Yes, people. Sandman Season 1, but don't call the new one Season 2, is coming to home physical media at last. And you're damn right I'm buying this. What about you, Brad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do have to say, though, that I wish that we were getting more bonus features. It was like inside the
elevator. I think we're going to get a surprise or two when it's released.
Yeah? Okay. Good. Yeah. Then, yeah. But I love the idea that it's coming out. Why would you not want to have that on your shelf? I'm not going to waste time talking about how much I love The Sandman, because you and I have talked about that.
We never talk about that. What are you on about? I've never heard you mention Sandman before.
So I love the series. I thought it was incredibly well done,
yeah.
Better than I was ever expecting it to be. So this is something that definitely deserves a physical release and definitely deserves to be in your library. You never know what's going to happen down the road with Netflix. I mean, you know, you just never know when they control, you know, they can take it off anytime for whatever reason. You have it on DVD or Blu-ray, it's yours forever. So November 28th, I think, is the date for the physical release.
One, yeah.
And I think digital is in October 16th, mm-hmm. maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm excited. Right before Christmas, too. So
exactly.
Perfect timing.
So people, get your lists out. Make sure you're good. So Santa knows you've been nice, not naughty. And you may get the Sandman box set. Now, what excites me as well, I mean, I don't know how much of this is rumor and hearsay, but again, people I've been speaking to have said that they are going to be standard issue releases and possibly, not definitely, possibly a couple of collector's editions versions of this box set with A, extra features, but B, allegedly a Dave McKeon cover and a presentation similar to the Absolute Editions to make it look like a book on a bookshelf. If that's the case, if I have to sell a kidney, that's the version I'm buying.
Yeah.
If that's not the case and it's a standard Blu-ray release, I'm still going to get it anyway. But those kind of rumors, which obviously, again, they are just that, really excite me. Now, We've talked about TV and everything that's live action and animated in the world of DC, but everybody knows what we love more than anything else is comics. Now, certain people aren't that happy with the new Birds of Prey. I've read issue one. I've loved it. The surprise new team member at the end of the book really made me smile. But let's talk about this. Birds of Prey has an extra new member, and Kelly Thompson has spoken about why Barbara Gordon and Huntress aren't part of the team. What do you make of these stories?
Okay, so I would agree with what she said. It basically, it's like what I think she said, it's not a sexy reason, but basically it's space. You know, when you're working with so many characters, you have to, you only have so much space you're dealing with. And I get that. Quite frankly, we've seen those characters in Birds of Prey long enough. Maybe it's time for some fresh blood.
So, absolutely.
And I got to say, I'm thinking that maybe you can run with the ball on this one is, I use a lot of sports metaphors for somebody who doesn't like sports, but I wasn't too familiar with the character that is the new.
Oh, the new member. Love Maps. But I love her.
Maps. But I know that I had read Gotham Academy.
Yeah.
A while ago, but I could not place that character. So now that's another thing that I want to go and dig out my trades of Gotham Academy and reread that, because I kind of forgot exactly what that character can do or is in the whole grand scheme of things.
Absolutely. She is great. Your typical spunky teenager, but not with a dark side, not with a streak, not with a horrible agenda. She's just a lovely, hardworking, extremely intelligent teen who worships Batman. And that whole thing, the fact that she's more of a Barbara Gordon type character. Babs appears every month in Nightwing. It's basically almost Nightwing and Batgirl, that comic book, and long may it continue to do so. So I'm getting enough Barbara Gordon. And like you said, we need some fresh blood in this team. And the reasons Kelly Thompson's picked for choosing the team she has, where do we see Barda? Having her as part of a team is
awesome. That's what picked my interest in the series.
Yeah.
Was the fact that how are they going to put Big Barda into Birds of Prey series is such an interesting choice. And I'd rather see fresh blood like that than characters that we've seen before. So I think Kelly Thompson made a good choice.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a writer whose work I adore anyway. Most of the stuff I've ever read of hers, I've really, really loved. And she gets these characters. She knows these characters. She's written most of them before. And she's a strong woman writing strong women. Now, the most negative press I've heard about this new series is why Harley? Why Harley's? Why so much Harley? Okay, many people might think your character's oversaturated. We see too much of her. But if she's well written, we've said the same about Batman, give me more. The Harley Quinn animated series is awesome. Kaylee Cuoco kills it. Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn is one of my favorite cinematic representations of any comic book character, period. And like Kelly said, like Cassandra Cain says in the actual comic book, she adds a level of chaos that'll help us be unpredictable against the people we're fighting against. And Cass is a lady of few words. And when she says to Black Canary, straight away, as soon as Black Canary makes the offer, I want you in the team, I want to save my sister, she just goes, yeah, okay, I'm in. She goes, Daisy, she's what's more important than the sister. Fantastic. So, yeah, Kelly Thompson, I totally, I mean, you know that down the line, Barbara's going to make an appearance, Huntress is going to make an appearance. But to have a core team of fresh characters, including Maps. Now, Maps, in this version, for all I can see, is a Maps from the future. In costume with powers, and that blows my mind, because all she ever wanted to do was be a superhero and be Robin. And for a short while she was in the pages of Batman Urban Legends and other places, and she had her own special a couple of months ago, which Adam reviewed for Dark Knight News, Maps of Gotham, which it was brilliant. It's in box, have a look at it, it's cool, and you get a real understanding, and you'll fall in love with her the way you fell in love with Yara Flor. Is how you're going to feel about Maps and Mrs. Gucci. She's brilliant. She's great. I love her. And the fact she's going to be in Birds of Prey. Fanboy nerdgasm. Mm-hmm. Love it. Now, something I'm not so sure I'm happy about, even though the piece of artwork that represents it is incredible. Do you remember when Wonder Woman fought using Kung Fu, had no powers, and wore a white mini dress? If you don't bother looking, you'll regret it. But it looks like that looked is coming back, at least on a cover. What do you make of this story?
It's there for a reason. First of all, I think I'm going to go Flicky Fashions here and say that it got a lot of hate back in the day, but I like the look. It's retro now and hip. And I think what more people disliked is the powers and the kung fu and that change. So I'll just say outright that I like the design. But this does make me wonder what he's got in store for us. Because Tom King, you never know what you're going to get. And the fact that they're bringing in this costume, so it's, of all the Dawn of DC books, this one is the one that I'm most curious about personally. And this cover just makes me wonder more what's going on, because with Tom King, it could be anything. But it's there for a reason, and that's what that reason is. In Tom King's hands, is probably going to be something pretty exciting.
Plus the fact of Trinity, Wonder Woman's daughter. I want to learn her history and who would be worthy of fathering a child with Diana of Themyscira. That alone has got me intrigued. Add the fact it's written by Tom King. Add the fact it's drawn by Daniel Sanpere. I'm thinking of collecting Wonder Woman again. And Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad did an amazing job.
Oh, yeah.
And
I love their run. Yeah.
So disappointed when they moved on. But this does sound fascinating. But again, anything those two writers do, Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad, I'll pick up and buy now. Mm-hmm. Happily. So yeah, let's see what happens. But I do like the look, obviously, but I'm obsessed with the 60s. Batman, the Beatles, Bond, they are three things I adore. So while the look is cool, I'm intrigued to find out more on what bearing it'll have on the series. Now, you talked about Blue Beetle in the movies and this new series, and the fact you can buy this comic in two languages is so cool, people. But we're getting a brand new, never before seen Blue Beetle villain in the Blood Scarab. Even the name's cool. What do you make of this story?
Yeah, the name's cool. I just love seeing the evolution of this character, especially now that he's in the spotlight with the movie. I think he deserves it. Graduation Day was a great miniseries, a way to
get so good,
get people hooked. And yeah, I want to see more. I want to see what the Blood Scarab is about. And the story also mentioned again about how family plays such an important role. And that was one of the great things about the movie. So if it can capture that same thing about the film, I think we're going to see a really new generation of really hardcore fans come on board for this character, especially Hispanic fans who maybe haven't seen a character that can represent them in the way that Jaime Reyes does. So yeah, I think it's going to be great.
So agree. This makes me really happy. And do you know what it really makes me crave? Because you and I grew up in a simpler era, and in a time where there were more intercompany crossovers. I remember Batman, Spider-Man, Batman, Hulk, Superman, Spider-Man, Justice League, Avengers, and have been blown away by those comics. But do you not think, especially after the success of Blue Beetle and the two Into the Spider-Verse movies, that a team up between Jaime Reyes and Miles Morales would be the coolest thing ever? That's a comic book I would buy multiple copies of characters.
And I think I had a theory during COVID that I talked a few times about on the podcast, that they have something planned, the two companies. I don't know when it's going to happen, but they've been laying hints. A big hint being way back in Doomsday Clock, when Mr. Manhattan sees the future and he talks about basically the Justice League fighting the Avengers, things like that, and things that were happening in Thor. Maybe that's kind of died off, but those things, those team-ups like Miles Morales and Blue Beetle would be a perfect example of, that would be a great mini-series in itself.
Wouldn't it, though?
As part of a bigger crossover event, I would buy that in a second.
Yeah. So we've had plenty of like DC indie crossovers in recent years, but the last big Marvel one was so long ago that I think we're due. And what better two characters who could be like brothers across worlds would be incredible. And this new villain sounds fantastic as well. Blood Scarab, Blue Beetle, they're like opposites of sides of the same coin, the Batman Joker type relationship possibly. And that's something that I would truly love to see. And almost by magic, looks like Wonder Woman is finally going to be getting a villain, according to Tom King, of Joker and Lex Luthor level proportions to truly be a final amazing nemesis for the Princess of Paradise Island. This one's really got me intrigued.
Maybe this villain is what's going to bring who's the father of Trinity. Maybe it's going to be such a big threat. Maybe it'll be an interchanging thing. I like the idea of introducing a villain in something that's not so landmark in a way. Because with Nightfall, you had Bane. With Death of Superman, you had Doomsday. And those are all centered around those big events. But this is just an ongoing series. So it would be kind of cool to see that character develop rather than be the center. I know they mentioned it's going to be the big bad. But I still think the big bad, if you watch the season of Buffy, for instance, that big bad through the season is a lot in the background. And a lot of the season, and then comes into it more towards the end. So I would like to see a kind of villain like that. But I think Wonder Woman deserves a villain that's that powerful.
Couldn't agree more.
Dr. Psycho is just not cutting it.
Nah, no. God, as soon as you mention his name, I just think about the Harley Quinn animated series.
Yeah,
me
too.
Oh, me too. What a way of totally changing a character, but not changing him at all. Fantastic. But yeah, I mean, if you think about Batman, Wonder Woman's iconic villains, it's the Cheetah, it's Dr. Psycho, Giganta, but none of them have the threat level, that constant thorn in the side feeling that your Luthers have, that your Jokers have. You never know when they're going to come back or what they're planning next. And they are arguably smarter than the people they're fighting. And there's this whole argument that a Joker is insane, but there's a counter argument saying that he's not insane at all. He's probably beyond insane and more sane than anyone else. He just gets what the joke is and how this world is, and he just doesn't care anymore. And they come back to plague their prospective heroes year after year, decade after decade. These are two characters that have been going since the 40s.
Yeah.
So we need that level, that caliber of villain for a character as superb, who I love, like Wonder Woman. So everything I read about Tom King's runs getting more and more excited. So yeah, brilliant. Now, something else that's got me excited is a brand new Superman story that looks to have that whole Superman for All Seasons wholesomeness and vibe behind it, The Harvests of Youth. And it's strangely musical influences. And this is a fascinating story. What did you make of this one?
Taylor Swift may not be our generation, but she is iconic. She's like in a level all of her own that's going to last way beyond. And I, quite frankly, I don't mind her music. I like her. I would go and see her in concert. So I see the effect that she can have on a younger generation, like Cena Grace's generation. And there is a certain purity and good girlness to her. And
absolutely.
I think that can be reflected in the character. And I did see Cena Grace talk about this comic a few times at San Diego. And it kind of all went back to that, the purity of the character and how pure-hearted he is, and taking it back to that that goodness. And he really liked exploring that. So I think Taylor Swift is kind of a perfect example of somebody who embodies some of those ideals that young people can relate to.
And she's got an incredibly Kara Zor-El vibe about her too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She could be a singing Supergirl. But yeah, I completely agree. And it's something that's come up a lot in recent weeks when we're talking about the character of Superman, with Superman Legacy, with My Adventures with Superman, how they're going back and embracing that vintage, wholesome, positive idol that Superman could be and should be.
Something the world needs right now.
Yeah, because, absolutely.
We're sorely needing for some heroes these days, it seems.
Someone to look up to. Absolutely. So bring it on. Anything that's got a positive message to give and such positive influences can only be a good thing, as far as I'm concerned. So that's it for comics. But we do have one other item of news. And this one is huge. So huge, in fact, that this could actually take a podcast of its own. But let's talk about the highlights of what's happening on the Batman Day 2023. I mean, this is, it's unbelievable, incomparable, and massive. Brad, go through the list and pick out your highlights, because this is
Yeah, unreal. I'll just, let me just pull up so I have it in front of me here.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's crazy.
Okay, I mean, but the fact that it's not just going to be comic books, but movies, yeah, TV shows, animated series. Yeah.
Like what we talked about, the Mask of the Phantasm for Ultra 4K. Pop-ups, interactive experiences, custom consumer products. I'm sure that that's something that you're going to be after, some of those. Although I think the one thing that I am really looking for forward to the most is the Gargoyle of Gotham number one.
I've read the first issue. Good stuff.
Because I'm looking forward to that series so much. And I love the idea that they have these special editions like Batman 608, which I think we've talked about, the Joker Deadly Duo special edition those days. But yeah, I think I still think that my one favorite thing is going to be Gargoyle of Gotham number one that comes out.
Absolutely. Well, I will have a soft spot for the hardcover collection of Batman 89 with their brand new spot full special edition dust jacket, as long as it's still got the VHS cover underneath, of course, because that's my favorite thing about that book.
See, that's massive. That's for the like, do I want to, if going in with a set budget, say, do I want to buy issues that I don't have or another edition of something that I already have? Mm-hmm. So me personally, I always lean to something that I don't have. And that's, I think that's another reason I keep coming back to that Gargoyle of Gotham.
Yeah.
Number one.
Different, new, fresh. Absolutely. But then we've got other news like new Batwheels episodes. Brilliant. But this is one that really got me because I love this show so much. But a Big Bang Theory marathon with fan favorite Batman themed episodes. Come on, that is great. Because Kaley Cuoco started on that show.
Yeah.
Our Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Batman Day on YouTube Kids. Batman Day Experiences. Now, this is one that's got a close spot to my heart. Two of my .NET News team will be at the press event 2 days before it opens of Batman Unmasked on Thursday, and then I'll be going to the event on Saturday as well with the general public. To have something in the UK is fantastic, but they're doing shows and special events all over the world, and Italy, France, and other countries also be getting brilliant things like this. New Spin Master toys, new statues, new collectibles. So much going on. I mean, do search Batman Day 2023. Go to the DC website to see the richness, the amount of memorabilia, merchandise, comic books, TV and movie releases and re-releases that you can catch on, I've said it before, after Christmas and Halloween, Batman Day is the day that's made for people like me. Do you have anything else to add about that?
No, I just... You said it's like for something like you, but that's true, but it's also for maybe people are just trying to get into the character. In fact, I have my nephew is, and I'm going to have to tell him like these certain things that you got to go because it's going to be Batman Day. Yeah. So it's got amazing. Something for everyone, the hardcore fans, the new fans.
Brilliant. And that's what you want. How old's your nephew?
I'm going to get in trouble if I get this wrong.
Oops,
I want to say 12.
Great age.
Yeah.
Perfect age. Yeah. That cusp of Batman adventures moving into the mainstream Batman. Oh, you lucky man. I'm going to meet my nephew, who's a few months old, in a couple of weeks' time, and I've already pulled out a few comics for their parents to give him.
I got him Long Halloween for Christmas. So.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Has he read any of it?
Yeah.
You're the best uncle ever. Good job. So that's it. That wraps up all our news for this week, episode 185 of the DC Comics News Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed listening to us as much as we've enjoyed giving you the news from across the DC universe. But until we come back, Brad, why don't you give viewers and listeners news of where they can catch you across the DC universe?
You can catch me writing news reviews, DC Comics News. You can find me on the Mad Love Harlequin podcast. We get back to recording it. The occasional episode of I Am the Night, which you so graciously host.
Something special is happening very soon.
Yes, it is. Yep. I also write a little bit for Josh, our editor's other website, Mark with the Movie Blog. You can follow me on Twitter or X or whatever the heck they're calling it now, at FlickyB1. And where can people find you?
Same, yeah. Follow me on Twitter at elstevo, ELSTEEVO. You can follow DC Comics News at DCComicsNews.NotNews, at DKNews.com, and Fantastic Universes at Fan Universes. For my personal work, search Steve J. Ray or Fantastic Universes in your search engine of choice to read my news reviews, features, and interviews across those three magical, marvelous, wondrous, amazing websites. This show you can find on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and wherever else you get your oral or video entertainment. But until you do, something you need to know is that you must always
read
more
comics.
We salute you.